What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drance, Canucks nerd.
Hello.
His official request to be addressed as Canucks nerd.
I think geek was my official request.
I'm changing it to nerd.
I appreciate you being like, I gave you everything you wanted while not doing that at all. Excellent stuff by you.
He covers the team for The Athletic as well.
The Athletic.
We're coming to you live from the Kintech studio.
Live.
That's right. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered Kintech by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is, of course, the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show as always on a Wednesday here. We're going to get to the crossover momentarily. Don Taylor and Rick Jolliwell, they've requested an early start for the crossover. So we'll get to them without too much nonsense here.
Yeah, hopefully... Hopefully Dollywall's done his fruit.
Yes. Jason Buchla, of course, joins us at 1 o'clock, as he always does on a Wednesday as well. Lots to get into. The Canucks held the fort last night.
Oh, did
as
they
you,
ever?
As you took extensive note of at The Athletic.
That
in,
was some
in two separate
serious
articles.
Fort holding, man.
That was like Aragorn at Helm's Deep holding
they,
the fort.
They
there.
Held that fort gently, right, like a baby.
No, I disagree with that. It was fierce. They did a fierce job.
You can't hold something fiercely. Anyway, let's get to the crossover, shall we?
Anyways, it's time for the crossover.
I see Don Taylor's brow furrowing. He's sick of our nonsense.
That's right. Don Taylor, Rick Dollywell, they are the hosts of Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out 10 to noon, Monday to Friday on Check TV. And they join us now, as they do every Wednesday, for the crossover. What's going on, guys?
Hey, guys.
No, my brown wasn't furrowing at all. I agree with everything you guys say. Did we just lose them?
Nope. We can see you.
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? We hear you. We see you. There we go. We got you back.
Well, I agree with everything you guys say. There was no furrowing.
That's nice. That's very nice of you. So what do you guys think of the win last night? I mean, there's a couple different ways to look at it. You can be concerned about how little the Canucks were able to generate. But on the other hand, you know, I thought defensively they were pretty solid. Lankanen was good. And I think sometimes over the course of 82 games, you're going to have to win games ugly like that, especially on the road.
You could tell Rick Tocchet, he didn't say as much, but you could tell he wasn't happy after the game. You know, he was happy with his goaltender, mm-hmm, obviously, but that was about it. By the way, Brännström made a great save on an empty net early in that game, and Lord knows what would have happened if that puck went in. But Tocchet talks about it all the time. Sometimes you're not going to be at your best. A lot of time you're not going to be at your best. Even when you're playing beer league, you got to find ways to fight through it and get 2 points. And I think it comes under that category last night, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kevin Lankanen, in our poll question, guys, is he the MVP of the Canucks after 20 games? Because they hit the 20-game mark last night. I really do believe he is. He's been absolute. Him and Sherwood have been absolute great finds. He's 10-3-2. He's bridged the gap to Demko very, very nicely. 14 of the last 17 starts. Remember, he struggled there for a couple of weeks,
yep,
guys?
Mm-hmm.
And then Tocchet said last night, you know, it was 11 of 12 starts. And Tocchet said, maybe I shouldn't play my goaltenders too much like that. But, boy, this guy, I just can't rave about him enough. Canucks can't sign him till January 1st. Tocchet loves him. He's already hinted at he'd like him back next year. But one thing is clear. I'm going to tell you right now. You're not getting a discount on the next contract with Lankanen. His agent, Todd Diamond's already given the Canucks a break. The next contract will be market value, or he's going to go to July 1st. It's not going to be a cheap contract, and it'll have to be term. And this regime hates paying. If you go back and look at the money this regime has given the backup spot.
Yes.
They don't like pay. They yep. don't like paying a ton
nope.
for the backup spot. And they got lucky with Lankanen this year. Very, very lucky. 875 is a dream for what he's producing. But I got a feeling that's not going to be there anymore. You're not going to get him that cheap. And if they want Lankanen next year, they're going to have to buck up a whole lot more than 875.
Boy, guys, isn't it this has to be one of the strangest starts to a season ever. I don't know if it's going to continue or not. Obviously, I don't know that. But all the road wins, they can't win it at home. They've got a goaltender who came out of nowhere who can't lose on the road. And then that strange stat from last night with Garland and DeBrusk scoring. Now they both have six goals. They have seven players tied for the team goal scoring lead with six goals each. This is just really, really strange. Does it get better from here? I'm not sure. I'll tell you this. It's great for us. Great for you guys. Great for talk shows. There's never a dull moment. So nothing's predictable. Never a dull moment.
It's been super weird. I have to give the Vancouver media like a collective pat on the back here, because what's the one thing we all said was going to be a strength of this team coming into the season? It was forward depth. And now they literally have seven forwards tied for the team lead at six goals. Like, hey, we've got a lot wrong, but we got that one right. We nailed that one, at least so far through the season.
Love to be right.
Absolutely. I know you do.
My favorite thing. Lankinen played well, gentlemen, but I do think we struggle sometimes when you see a game where one team has 30 plus and the other team has 12 to sort of say, like, the goaltender stole it, when I really thought Boston's offense, like, I thought Boston's shooters were bad last night. I didn't think they looked very dangerous at any point in the game. And I credit Vancouver's defensive play. I credit Lankinen for playing solidly. But it didn't feel like a goalie stole a point game to me or goalie stole the win game to me. It kind of felt like Boston was not playing well and Vancouver was better materially. Like, I think Vancouver deserved that win at the end of the night. What do you think? Do you think Boston looked like they had any venom offensively?
Well, you know what might have summed it up is I thought Lindholm at the end just kind of flipped the puck at the net. Like, instead of just cranking it and hoping if it didn't go straight in and went off somebody and there was a big rebound, maybe that sums it up. But now that you say that, I think about it, and you just expect so much from the Boston Bruins, given their recent history, their history going way back. And yeah, I didn't feel they were super dangerous. But then again, to go against what I just said and what you said, Thomas, you could tell Tocchet wasn't happy after the game. Maybe he felt his team. I definitely felt his team stole one. Didn't say as much. You could just tell by his body language.
And Thomas, you seem surprised that Boston didn't test him much, but they are the second lowest scoring team in the National Hockey League. Last night, this is a team that is struggling to score goals. It's been their number one problem in Boston this year. And, it was a great situation for the Canucks last night because they can play Lankinen last night and then go with Seelovs tonight in Pittsburgh. It's a really good setup. And now they're going to face a team tonight. We had a Pittsburgh reporter on today, and he absolutely...
Josh Yoey from The Athletic.
Yes. Yeah, Josh Yoey, Drance's buddy there.
Yep, love Josh.
He was very critical. He was very critical of how bad the Penguins are. They're starting to see empty seats in Pittsburgh, which, and you guys know, is a great hockey town. They just love their hockey in Pittsburgh. And there was a 2,000 empty seats at the last home game. Carlson's been absolutely dreadful, he said. There's another team. They're giving up, leaking. I think they're number one in the NHL in goals against. They can't score. We talked about Pettersson, the defenseman. He did say something interesting. Jim Rutherford absolutely loves Marcus Pettersson in Pittsburgh. Absolutely loves him. And Donnie threw the question at Josh about, would Sidney Crosby leave there? He actually said if Sidney Crosby did leave, he thinks Vancouver would be somewhere near the top of his list. And I'll tell you, I see you, Dodd, shaking your head there, but I'll tell you why.
No, I'm smiling. Let's go. Let's get the Crosby to Vancouver rumors started.
Yeah, Donnie's been on that for a couple of weeks. But you know what?
No, I did. I said when he signed the contract, 8.7, I thought to myself, that's low, but movable. And I've been backed up by several people. I know Thomas agrees.
Okay, back to Josh. Maybe he said that Crosby absolutely loves Rutherford and he absolutely loves Tocchet. So,
and Patrick Alvin.
And he loves scoring historic goals in the city of Vancouver, baby.
That's true.
Let's go.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he just got number 600.
Let's go.
A historic goal to maybe win something. I don't know.
He was there.
I don't know. Just saying. What a curse breaker.
So what you're saying is the Canucks really need to stomp the Penguins tonight. So yes. Crosby is like, guys, I've had enough of this. I want to join them.
Yeah, I want to jump. Yeah. It was sad the other night when he scores against Utah. Oh. And Josh Joey mentioned, you know, a lot of empty seats. 6-1 loss.
Yes.
You know, to not a new franchise, but a franchise that has had all sorts of trouble. It was just kind of sad.
At least it was the 2-1 goal, though.
Has to be.
At least it was the 2-1 goal.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, it's not like they were down 6 and he scored, like, a meaningless one with 5 minutes to go. Like, at least the game was still competitive in the moment. So he got to be like, yeah, we're going to get back in this. And then, you know, they penguinsed it. With the Lankinen conversation that you sort of bring up, Rick, because you're right. Like, not only has this Rutherford-Alvin front office, you know, gone very affordably with their backup goaltender, you know, throughout their time here. I mean, Spencer Martin and Shelovs and Lankinen and on, but also, you know, like Matt Murray was on an ELC when he was backstopping or sharing the crease with Marc-Andre Fleury. And the moment they signed him to an extension, they paid to get off of Marc-Andre Fleury in the expansion draft, right? Like going back 10, 15 years, Rutherford teams don't tend to pay their backups, but how does that sort of interact? I mean, we do think Demko's getting in soon. Right? Maybe on this road trip, maybe when they get back home. But we know he's coming back soon, and we know that, hey, like, you know, across multiple seasons now, you know, when Demko has hit 60 plus games in a season, like, it hasn't necessarily meant good things for his health and sort of longevity here. Does the Demko situation and sort of the decisions they'll face this summer, Rick, in your view, sort of have to modify the way that the club allocates money to the backup position?
Yeah. Well, Tockett's already hinted a few weeks ago he'd like to see him back, Lankinen. But then you got to keep one eye on Shelovs.
Yeah.
Okay. What is Shelovs going to do if they re-sign Lankinen? He's not going to be doing cartwheels, right? He won't be happy because
what's the opposite of cartwheels?
Yeah, we need the opposite. We know when someone's happy, they're doing cartwheels.
That direction, maybe.
You only do cartwheels when you're happy. What are you talking about?
But what's the opposite? What do you do when you're upset?
Because you said we know what
don't
we don't know
me
what
out here.
No, well, maybe you do a cartwheel in the opposite direction.
You do a somersault.
You get fetal position and shake back and forth. No, like you said we know
listen
what he's
listen to me.
We are trying to.
Stop the cartwheel talk. Forget about cartwheels. Listen to me. He's not going to be doing cartwheels if he if they sign Lankinen.
You just told us to forget about cartwheels. Then you said it.
Oh, my. I'm trying to rephrase.
Who's
into my
doing cartwheels, by the way?
Shelovs ain't going to be doing cartwheels if they re-sign Lankinen.
For some reason, I had the image of Rutherford doing your cartwheel.
Okay. You got to keep an eye on Shelovs. And
doing
you know what?
Cartwheel.
Is he going to be ready in 9 months to be the backup in Vancouver?
Yeah.
That's the key for me. And if you don't think he is, then go ahead and re-sign Lankinen. You know what? Go ahead and do it. But keep in mind, Demko's only got, after this year, 1 year left on his contract.
Right.
Right? So you got to keep an eye on that.
The thing with go ahead and re-sign Lankinen, though, I mean, we'll see how much he plays even once Demko is back, but it could still be a pretty significant amount.
Yep.
And, you know, if he plays, what, upwards of 30 games this year and has a performance close to what he's already done, to me, like, he's not looking for a backup role at that point, right? He's going probably somewhere where he can play close to 50% of the games. So, you know, it's great that he's been as good as this, but it might not be their decision ultimately. Like, he might just price himself right out of consideration for that role if he keeps performing like this.
Or this could be a really, considering, you know, the front part of his career, the way it's gone, this might be the perfect place for him in that you have to think that the Canucks, given history with Demko, that, you know, they don't want to play him as much. So he'll get a lot of time. I don't know if that would, play into his thinking at all, but given what's happened in Chicago and Nashville, they have all sorts of respect for him, but he ended up moving on. Maybe this would be a good place to be with a team that might very well do some special things in the postseason.
It's a fascinating set of sort of considerations for the Canucks in net here. As for the trade market, Rick, you hearing anything about the club's wider trade posture as we sort of approach the quarter mark of the season?
Well, Juracek, Rick.
Yeah, Juracek, they definitely called in on. Columbus told a bunch of teams, including Vancouver, that they didn't have the assets for a Juracek, a right shot, sixth overall 2 years ago. Canucks don't have the prospects, and they didn't want to give to Columbus what the Blue Jackets wanted. So you know that Columbus would have asked for Tom Olander. So then the Canucks are very high on Olander. So internally, the Canucks had to decide who's better, Jiříček or Olander. Do they really think Jiříček is better than Olander? They obviously don't think so, because this deal could have been done. Do they get back into it? Who knows? But right now, I was told that when Columbus told a bunch of teams that they didn't have the assets, Vancouver was one of them, but they checked in on that. The other one I want to talk about is, you know, Vancouver also kind of wants to wait until Demko's back to see what kind of this team looks like when Demko is up and running. So, you know, have some patience here. Rangers, not a fire sale, but I do want to tell you one defenseman they like on the Rangers, and this regime absolutely loves him, is Braden Schneider. He is a guy that the Canucks, when the Canucks were talking with the Rangers for JT Miller, Schneider's name was one that Vancouver wanted, and the Rangers said, thanks, but no thanks. That's a guy, a good young defenseman that Vancouver's liked in the past, this regime has liked in the past. So, you know, you hear Hoaglander's name out there. Is that a chip you could use? But you tell me, and Donnie and I talked a bit about this on the show. Hoaglander, 7 minutes last night, no goals in 15.
Rick wants him in the top six.
No goals in 15 games. No points in 10. 24 goals last year, 2 goals this year, on pace for 8. Can't play him in a 1-0 game in the third last night. The trust is not there with the coach. Why did the Canucks sign this guy for 3 years at $3 million? Did the GM not ask the coach, if this is a player you can work with and we'll sign him long term? Now you want to move the kid. If they do, how the hell are you going to move him? If there was a pro scout in Boston last night watching him play 7 minutes, parked on the bench in the third, like, what? How are you going to move this guy? And Donnie and I had the conversation on the show.
Well, we argued about it.
You want to move the guy, okay, how are you going to move him when pro scouts are watching the Canucks and he's playing 7 minutes?
But if you put him in the top six, maybe you lose the hockey game.
Okay, but then, okay, then it's one or the other.
And who are you taking out of the top six, though?
That's the win.
No, but that's the problem.
Not sure what.
Do you need to put him in the top six, or do you just need to, like, this is what I don't understand. Last 10 games, Nils Hoaglander has played 4 minutes and 42 seconds on the power play. To put that in context, Daniel Sprong, over the same period of time, has played 4 minutes and 30 seconds on the power play. You know, like, it's one thing to not trust him in a close game where your team is basically abandoned, even trying to generate scoring chances, and you're in pure hold-the-fort mode.
Right.
But it's another to be like, okay, well, we're going to give a ton of power play two-time to Danton Heinen and Kiefer Sherwood ahead of this guy. And Sherwood, I know he's played incredibly well. But at some point, like, you know, can Hoaglander not help you with a line mate like Besser? Would that not help a little bit? Does it not make sense to get him even 5-6 minutes a game early on with sort of at least another skilled player that might just help him feel good about his game or get him some second power play ice time? I mean, I don't think you need to play him in the top six. There's got to be a middle ground here where you can at least give this guy something to feel good about so that this doesn't, you know, snowball into being a really significant cold streak that eats away at a young guy's confidence.
Yeah, that's obviously interesting. Obviously, Rick Tocchet just doesn't believe in him, and maybe in spurts he has.
Yeah.
Thomas, I'm not really sure.
Well, the interesting thing, Johnny. You said Rick Tocchet has believed in him in spurts, and Rick's question about did the front office and the coaching staff talk? Like, Hoaglander was one of the good news stories of training camp, right? Like, best shape on the team, came in, played really well. It seemed like he had earned. Seemed like he had earned the trust of the coach.
Yes.
That's what makes everything that's happened since so surprising. It flipped on a dime, really.
Yep.
And it just hasn't been the same since.
Well, he missed a back check against the Carolina Hurricanes.
It always comes down to it. It always comes down to the 200-foot game.
Yeah.
Especially without the puck.
Like
there's
Tocchet.
No trust.
And you know what? When Tocchet talks positively about Nils Hoaglander, he always brings up the forecheck.
Yeah.
He always talks about, you know, like he is a demon when he's forechecking. I haven't seen a whole, mind he has been on the ice all that much, but I haven't seen a whole lot of that. And obviously he feels that his 200-foot game isn't there, or he's not working hard enough
penalties,
on the forecheck.
There's been a lot of penalties.
But then again, you did extend the guy. It's a real head scratcher in a weird situation in the start of a really weird season.
Guys, and he played 7 minutes last night. Him and Arshdeep Bains, they played 7 minutes last night. Seven.
Yeah.
And
but they
and
won.
I know that. And the other thing I'm going to tell you right now, Hoglander and his agent talked to the Canucks in the summer. They had brief talks. Do you know when this contract negotiation picked up? Was when he showed up to camp in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
And when he showed up to camp in great shape, they called his agent and said, you know what? We want guys like this in Vancouver. He's a great role model for young kids showing up. He was 1, 2, or 3 in fitness tests. And that's where negotiations took up when he came to camp and he was in great shape. So now you go from 3 times 3 to 4th line, 7 minutes. Guy's got no confidence. I mean, how do you move him now? And his name's popping up all over the place. You can't hear a Canuck rumor without Hoglander's name in it.
Are we going to get to the point, guys, where Hoglander's people say, or his agent says, look, I got to get out of here.
What a great point, Don. You know, what a great point.
Time's ticking on my career.
Yep.
Obviously, the head coach who isn't going anywhere, doesn't like me. Maybe it's time to move on.
You probably buy yourself some time with the extension.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like he needs a new deal, right? He's got a little bit of runway before his next deal. So this year, I think you can still muddle through with it, right? And try to, maybe you get to the summer and you try to kind of reset things. Okay, clean slate, come in next year, and we'll start again on the new deal. But it's...
His usage can't be like this at $3
million. No, absolutely not. It can't, especially when he's like 25, right?
No.
Yeah.
No. And the other thing is, guys... his agent is obviously sitting back. And his agent's got six, seven clients on Vancouver, if you consider Abbotsford too, Donnie.
And guys like Sawyer Mineo.
Who's his agent?
He's the new Dan Mills.
Yeah, he is.
Who's his agent?
Alain Waugh.
Okay.
R-O-Y, but it's Waugh.
Yeah.
Alain Waugh.
Yeah, anyways, we're familiar with that name.
Anyways, he's got Mineo in Seattle, who's a great young kid. He's going to be on the Canadian junior team at the World Juniors, Donnie. But he's got to be concerned. Let's be honest.
You'd think so with the way his client is playing and the usage he's getting right now. And Rick, you know, you mentioned that they want to wait and see what the team looks like with Thatcher Demko back in the fold, maybe gave him a little bit of time to kind of get back up to speed before they really make any moves. Does that extend to JT Miller as well? And obviously that's a unique situation. And we heard just a little bit of an update from Patrick Alvin yesterday. We don't know the details, but he's such an important part of the team when he's available. Is it a case where they want to wait until he's back in the lineup, right, to see what they've got before they do some wheeling and dealing as well?
Yeah, he could be back after the road trip. Like that Columbus game, I think, on December 6th, he could be back for that. I know some people are saying he might take a little bit longer. I'm not hearing that. You know, he could be back for that Columbus game. Obviously, we can't do much about JT. We just got to wait and let him deal through, you know, what he's going through.
But the point he's making is that it's tough to evaluate the team given what's happened through 20 games. And they haven't had a full lineup yet.
Mm.
You know, led by... you know, their goaltender.
Absolutely. Well, let everybody get healthy and let's see if it's... and by the way, guys, they're only 2 points off last year's 20-game pace, which they won 50 games. So, you know, a lot of doom and gloom and adversity, but they're only 2 points off thanks to their road record, which is 8-1. You know, I mean, they've been awful at home, but thanks to their road record, I mean, they're right there where they were last year.
Pretty interesting, by the way. Haven't played any of the top 10 teams in the league on the road yet. Just... putting that out there as context for what we've seen on the road.
Mr. Negative.
Seems like useful context.
Shame on you, Thomas.
Sorry.
They've won 8 straight on the road. They're 8-1, and you're going to bitch about it?
Road Warriors.
They haven't played anyone? Give me a break.
No, I just, you know, I don't think it's... there's no reason that they're better on the road than home, and I think as the sample expands, we'll see it come back together, and I think competition's probably the most likely explanation. Seems reasonable.
And then also the lack of back-to-back. Well, they've got one now.
Now they're playing a back-to-back.
The lack of back-to-backs. Their schedule's been pretty good. I'll give you that.
Their schedule's been favorable.
They've had one of the best, easiest schedules in the National Hockey League. They are very lucky with the schedule. They cannot complain in October, November about the schedule. But the Vegases of the world and the Dallases and the Winnipegs, all those guys are coming up in the second half, and they're going to have to get their stuff together in the second half because the schedule is going to be a whole lot tougher in the second half.
Well, and I think the hope is at that point, at some point, right, you got to hope that you have, you know, healthy Demko, healthy and right JT Miller, Pettersson playing better than he was earlier in the year, and Hughes and Besser are all in the lineup at the same point, right, which obviously hasn't happened up to this point. And I think what we've seen so far from the Canucks, and yeah, the schedule has helped a lot, is with Rick Tocchet coaching, right, with Quinn Hughes, the goaltending from Kevin Lankinen, they can hang in a lot of games, especially in a soft schedule. But to find that next gear where we look at them as real Stanley Cup contenders, it's going to take all of those key players being in the lineup together and firing on all cylinders, which, I mean, we just haven't come close to seeing on either front yet this year.
Yeah, with those players in the lineup in a tougher schedule, yeah, maybe it all works out, which, you know, speaking, I use the word weird again, but Saturday, I know it was Ottawa, I get that, but that them winning that game without, you know, Miller, Besser, Demko, Hughes played 7 minutes before he got suspended, just adding to the strangeness of the season, but hard to evaluate at this point.
All right, we'll let you guys go there, and I look forward to next week. We'll get another update on the Sidney Crosby to Vancouver trade talks, which I'm sure are ongoing. Pending tonight's results, yeah. I guess.
Donnie and I are going on to Beatty Street. We're going to do some cartwheels. See you later.
It's now Todd Taylor.
Now that I want to see.
Absolutely. Film that. Film that and send us the video, guys, of you two doing cartwheels
please
down Beatty Street.
Please do that on the show.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk next week. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly. Monday to Friday, you can check them out 10 to noon on Check TV. And they join us every Wednesday here on The Crossover. Love the cartwheel report from Dolly. Always a highlight when he breaks out the cartwheel report. Who is and who isn't doing cartwheels?
We do need the opposite of cartwheels.
Someone suggested burpees.
You know what? You know what it is, though?
My favorite was when he said, let's stop talking about cartwheels.
Forget about cartwheels! All I'm saying is he's not going to be doing cartwheels.
So you know what? I think actually, as Dollywall conceives of it, okay? To be doing cartwheels or to not be doing cartwheels is a binary. You either are or are not.
One
so what's
zero,
the opposite of doing cartwheels?
Not doing it.
Not doing cartwheels. And that's the only mode.
Those are the only two states that people exist
that's the only mode.
I mean, it is logically true.
Through which joy is expressed.
Everyone in the world is either, there's two categories of people. One, doing cartwheels.
Not doing cartwheels. That's it. it's a binary.
It is a straight binary. You cannot escape the binary.
And when we asked him, what's
we're
the
all
opposite?
A prisoner to it. Yeah, no,
what's
it really
the opposite of doing cartwheels. It like broke
it
him.
Short circuited his
like,
brain.
What? The opposite of doing cartwheels is not doing cartwheels. And now we know. Hey, look, I feel like we learned something here today.
Yeah, we always do with those guys.
We're not always an educational program, but today...
We learned about the cartwheels. We learned that Sidney Crosby is imminently coming to Vancouver.
And we did cartwheels about that?
Yep.
But also, we stopped doing cartwheels about that because we realize it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, it's probably just a joke. Anyways...
What's the deal with cartwheels?
What's the deal with cartwheels? So true, Dom.
Well, here's the deal. You're either doing them or you're not.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. We can talk about the game a little bit more. You had a good piece up about some Canucks prospects as well.
We can talk about the game.
Yeah.
Or we could forget it happened.
Or we could do that. We could look ahead to tonight's game.
Or
we'll see. Who knows what we're going to do?
I got some takes about the game.
Who knows what we're going to do, but we'll do it. Whatever it is, on the other side here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk.
Is this Talking Heads like
a ripoff?
I
was saying
heads?
The first bass notes. I was like, thought we were about to hear Psycho Killer. Yeah, I got really excited. Got really excited, but no, now it's not. Now it's not Talking Heads.
No,
oh,
we are playing the Euro House.
Okay.
Well, I liked it better when it was the
yes. When it was Rights Free Talking Heads, I got excited.
Psycho Killer.
Find us some Rights Free Talking Heads, actually.
That's
please.
A good idea. Search Talking Heads, next one. We'll
I love
do
how
that.
You guys are like Dance Monkey, dance. Another good song.
Dom, please do your job of choosing rejoiner music.
We would, please.
And Dom's like, oh, I never get any peace and quiet around here.
Dance Monkey, dance.
I'm just trying to relax, guys.
I'm just trying to spin my
you're at
favorite
work.
Euro beats.
Just let me play this Euro beats.
Now it sounds like real McCoy.
Sure. All right. We're live from the Kintech studio here. 650. That's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com.
We got a text in.
Yeah.
About cartwheels.
Yes, of course.
If someone completes a cartwheel, an unsigned texter asks, lands on their feet and immediately does a second cartwheel, are they continuously in a state of doing cartwheels or are they momentarily in a non-cartwheel state? If the former, how long would the pause need to be before their cartwheel status resets? Is preparing to do a cartwheel a third state or one of the main two? Where are the boundaries? If someone attempts a cartwheel but fails halfway through, were they ever in a state of doing cartwheels? Asking the real questions here. Trying to get a reaction from Rick Dollywall. I'll get back to you. Based on the...
Oh, you're going right to the authority.
I'm going right to the authority with this text. I've sent it to him and he responded, LOL, LOL. And I said, need your reaction. When I get Dollywall's reaction to this question, we'll
pass it along.
Yeah, we'll defer to the authority here.
By the way, my favorite thing about this is unsigned texter. Last text they sent in before this one was to the morning show on November 8th. And it just simply says, what is a calzone if not a pizza burrito? So this texter is all about the big philosophical questions.
What is
incredible back to back text from this?
What is a calzone if not a breakfast burrito?
A pizza burrito.
A pizza burrito.
Yeah.
A breakfast burrito.
No, it's not a breakfast.
Can
burrito.
You tell that breakfast burritos are my favorite
are on your mind?
Item?
Isn't a pizza burrito just a calzone?
No,
that's what the texter just said.
Sorry, we're listening to Eurobeats.
Oh, okay.
There actually are.
That's you just reversed the question that the texter just posed.
Now, I believe that a pizza burrito, okay? I believe that a pizza burrito would be a stuffed sandwich of some kind rolled in a pizza. I believe that a pizza burrito would require that the pizza be the flatbread.
Yeah. No, I think a pizza burrito would be a burrito with pizza stuff in it, with that matzo and tomato sauce and pepperoni and whatever.
Which, by the way, sounds great.
Amazing.
I mean, do you ever do pizzadillas? Those are easy to do at home.
I probably have. I don't do them regularly.
I'm guessing Taco Bell's made that by now.
I don't think they have. Pizzadilla is just something you make on your own at home. It's delicious.
By the way, Chris and Duncan weighs in on the cartwheel debate. A continuous cartwheel is like a penalty shot, must have continuous momentum.
Ooh.
I think he's right. Because you see, like, gymnasts can do, like, they can string cartwheels together where they never stop. It just flows perfectly from one to the next. I think the average Joe trying to do a cartwheel, there's probably a pause. But Dollywell does phrase it as not doing a cartwheel, doing cartwheels. So it implies there has to be multiple for it to really count.
Dollywell, I said, I need your reaction. And then I followed up. And then I followed up a third time. And then he replied, I'm in my car, FFS.
What does FFS stand
what?
For?
We can't say it on air, Dub. Ask Lena.
That's
she'll tell you.
Joke.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
See, I believed it of you, though.
You're the worst person. The backhanded, like, compliments.
No, I thought you were just that innocent.
You know about the ship of Theseus? You're too stupid to know the ship of Theseus.
I didn't say that.
For Dom,
why
FFS.
Are we still on this?
I don't know.
For Dom, FFS stands for Freaky Friday Shenanigans.
Imagine
all
you
right.
And I body swapped.
Yeah, that'd be
that'd
freaky.
Be freaky.
Yeah. All right.
What's the first thing you'd do as Dom?
Listen to jazz and drive around erratically.
Get in his car and scat it up, cut some people off.
Don't like that at all.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay, you mentioned you had takes on the games.
I got some takes
on the
games.
All right, let's get into those.
Eric Brandstrom.
Yes.
On the second pair. We finally... Maybe, so long as Hughes doesn't get a misconduct in the first three shifts of the contest, may get a look at Vancouver's new look defensive deployment schemes. And then he plays 13 minutes and is by far last among all Canucks defenders in 5-on-5 ice time. Meanwhile, Nils Höglander plays 7 minutes. And then the Canucks aren't happy that they're generating shots?
That they're not generating shots, yeah. That,
right, like, these things might be related, guys.
Now, I will say, 11, almost 12 minutes, 5-on-5 for Brännström, 0 shots for the Canucks. Now, small sample.
Sure.
But it's not as if he was in that game specifically. We've seen him drive offense for the team, so there's reason to believe it could turn around, right? But to be fair to the coaching staff in that game, it's not like it was working at a high level for him.
Fair. It was an extremely negative game state.
Yes.
And I actually think there's a lot of takeaways from Vancouver's defensive deployment. First of all, Tyler Myers, third with a bullet among all Canucks defenders in ice time per game, which means for the sixth straight season, Tyler Myers, number three defenseman, remains just a state of being for the Canucks. This team has spent, how many different Nate Schmidt seasons or, you know, Tucker Pullman contracts or, you know, the Filip Hronek trade and the Tom Vilander pick. Like, this team's thrown so many resources at upgrading their defense. And the truth is that Tyler Myers, number three defenseman,
is a constant.
Is a constant. It's just something they can't escape. So that's the first thing. The second thing is Noah Juulsen played more than Carson Soucy by a minute and a half, 5-on-5. And they actually spotted Soucy an additional couple of minutes, right? Three shifts with Quinn Hughes over the course of the game. So I would argue, in fact, that Soucy's usage was actually a little bit inflated over the course of that game versus, you know, Now, what does that tell us? That tells us with Brännström bumping up to play with Myers in bulk and Soucy bumping down to play with Juulsen, it's not a matter of just spreading the minutes around. I think the Canucks coaching staff, in trying to get more out of their second pair, have sort of identified the player that they think needs to be a little bit more protected or needs to be better in any event. And it's Soucy. It's not Myers. And I don't know that we knew that until last night, at least not in terms of what actions the club had actually taken. I thought that spoke volumes about exactly where the club's at in terms of assessing their own defenders.
But I also kind of wonder about how much of that is rebuilding Soucy's confidence a little bit, right?
Like, because
I think long term, the rest of the season, long term is what I'm talking about. They would prefer Carson Soucy to be the number three defenseman. But it's just where their games are at right now. It's Myers, but they want to help Soucy get back to that point.
For sure. I mean, I think the club likes both a lot.
Yeah.
And I think they've said that with the contracts that they've signed both to. You know, I think there's no question that Soucy is in the mind's eye of the Canucks when they think about their long-term planning. Like, you know, not a long-term fixture beyond, you know, next year, which is the last year of his contract, but certainly in the medium term, you know, an answer for your top four. But he hasn't been at that level. And right now, anyway, the coaching staff thinks he needs insulation or some sort of program to rebuild his confidence. And, you know, in splitting up Soucy Myers, right, it's clear that they think one's a little more culpable than the other. Maybe we should have figured that out based on who actually bumped down to take line rush's third.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it's obvious in retrospect, but until we'd seen it in practice, even if the game script was so negative and so strange, you know, I do think that was enormously telling. So here we are again. Brännström in the top four results in him playing fewer minutes than he's played in almost any game all season. And it's sort of Myers who continues to be, you know, the steadier like 3/4 option for this team than anyone else they have at the moment. Usage reflected that.
And Noah Juulsen ends up playing
top four minutes
as well. The fourth most 5-on-5 minutes of the defenseman. And that's interesting because I've been kind of operating on my own assumption that when Derek Forward is ready to return at some point, that Erik Brännström would still stay on the lineup, right? And it would be Noah Juulsen who comes out and you just go with four lefties and two righties and make it work because Brandstrom's been that important for the team. I mean, it's just one game, so there's no guarantee, but we do know, you know, you just get this sense that Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote, who has a big say on the blue line, of course, as well, the temptation to always go with the big physical shot blocking guy is very, very strong. Right. And I think that, as you said, is such a negative game state, right? They were blocking so many shots. They weren't generating offense. I think that's why they kind of leaned into it, right? They're like, okay, it's that type of game. So let's throw some more Noah Juulsen at it instead of trying to change the type of game it was, right? By playing Erik Brännström a little bit more. And I wonder, you know, I still probably think like if Derek Forbort was ready to go, you know, tail end of this road trip, but I have no idea. I still think it would be Juulsen coming out, but again, that temptation to go with the archetype that they like, that they've had success with, is very, very strong, and that's a tough barrier for Erik Brännström to overcome while he's looking for more minutes.
Yeah. No, exactly right. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch exactly how this all shakes out once the sample expands. Last thing about the defense that I wanted to point out was in a game in which they were, you know, out attempted better than 3-1,
mm-hmm.
right? Or better than 2-1, right? Like 2.5-1. It was what, 57-23 mm-hmm. in terms of shot attempts at 5-on-5.
Yep.
Shots that the Bruins were taking 2 and a bit for every one that Vancouver generated. Like a game in which Boston thoroughly controlled play. In that game state, the Canucks recorded 9 shots on goal and only permitted 9 shots on goal with Quinn Hughes on the ice. It's like, it doesn't even matter how bad this team mm-hmm. performs environmentally, right? In terms of the run of play. And again, I don't think they got outplayed. And I don't even think they played poorly. I just thought they did nothing with the puck. I thought it was at least a structured game.
Structure was the word that came to mind to me watching. It's like, they're not, I don't know if they're playing well. They're playing extremely structured.
Yes.
Like extremely structured hockey. You could see it. And like that's why Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin wanted a coach who could instill structure, right? So that you can do nothing with the puck for most of the game and still have a chance to win some of these games because you are playing so structurally sound, right? And you saw the theory of that play out on the ice last night.
Without question. So with regards to that, right? With regards to mm-hmm. that side of it, incredible that Quinn Hughes, even in those circumstances, is they're going to still win Quinn Hughes' minutes no matter what. What an atom bomb
yeah.
that this team has in their arsenal.
Yeah, and even the shot attempts, it was 14-17 for the Bruins. And everyone else so far off from that for the Canucks.
Yeah.
Right? But Quinn Hughes yeah. still basically right around 50%
Quinn
of the shot
Hughes
attempts.
Is the House Atreides arsenal of warheads. A one man.
Sure.
A one man Dune uh-huh. Warhead Arsenal. Yep.
Not just holding the fort. Going on offense, Quinn Hughes.
Oh, yeah.
Doing cartwheels.
Everyone's doing cartwheels at all moments.
It's interesting because Quinn Hughes has so many reasons to do cartwheels, but he does not look like a cartwheel guy. He looks pretty down for doing cartwheels.
No kidding.
If Rick Tocchet goes out and says, Quinn Hughes, big cartwheel guy, I would lose it.
We got to get Tocchet's stance on cartwheels. Is he doing cartwheels?
He
wasn't last night. That should be the new way, like Batch, when he asks like what he just generally what he thought of the game. Like, you doing cartwheels after that one talk? What do you think? Is that a cartwheel game?
A cartwheel game. So you can have a cartwheel game now. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're tilting at cartwheels.
We're tilting at cartwheels.
Well, cartwheel is just like a replacement for good.
Right. Happy.
Happiness. I think it's like joy, happiness, excitement. That's what it's all about. Because it's not just, because you would listen to it, right? It's not just happiness. It's like anticipatory happiness, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's usually an agent that is excited about his player who's going to get paid, right? That's who's doing cartwheels.
That is usually what
that's
it is.
That's the ultimate, like the example of somebody doing cartwheels. So it's usually like you're excited. You're excited about something that's going to happen in the future is when you're doing cartwheels. So, for example, they might be doing cartwheels about like a prospect who's popping really well or playing right. really well, right?
Sure, because it means future paydays. I'm reminded when I was a child.
Uh-huh. What a way to start a story. You turned into like a little Victorian boy there or something.
When I was a wee little lad, I went and saw Jerry Seinfeld live. Okay.
All right.
And Jerry Seinfeld, at the end of his stand-up set, answered questions from the audience. And it's always stuck with me to this day, where no matter what the question was, he was able to answer it as if it was a stand-up bit. As if, normally, just like living his life and breathing oxygen.
That's how he operated.
He processed the world.
Yeah.
So someone asked him about his obsession with cars, right? And one of the things that he said about cars, what he likes about cars, he said something like, you know, one thing I like about cars is that you're inside, but you're outside, right? You're moving, but you're staying still, right? There's this like perfect balance of driving.
Juxtaposition.
And it's always stuck with me. I think that's basically cartwheels. You're happy and you're moving, or you're sad
and you're not moving
and you're motionless.
Interesting. That's not sure about that one.
That's where I come to.
That's also a fascinating explanation for being really into cars.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That one had some puzzlers for my brain already today.
It's a high concept show today.
One is going to stick with me, I think, as well.
I'm sorry, bud.
No, it's all right.
Stuck with me.
You're inside, but you're outside. What we're all going for, of course.
Yeah.
You're moving.
What does it all mean?
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. People are getting on. Oh, some people are into it. Some people are a little frustrated as well with us. But, man, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. We've gone off the rails a little bit here today. But somebody texted in looking ahead to tonight's game, wondering if we could expect maybe even like a little bit more fatigue than normal from the Canucks because they were exerting a lot of effort on the defensive end, right? And it's, you know, generally we think of that as a higher effort process than if you're playing a lot with the puck. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how much to factor that in. They're going into Pittsburgh. We'll do the gambling update on the whiteboard in the final segment. The last time I checked, it was a pretty even game, basically a pick 'em, which, yeah, even though the Penguins are really bad, Canucks are slight favorites, I guess. The Penguins are really bad, but it's still a road back-to-back. And, you know, I think... them doing nothing with the puck last night in Boston. Boston is a very low event team, right? We saw it offensively. Yeah, they generated a lot of shots, but not a ton of like really, really dangerous ones. They were pretty good defensively as well, the Bruins. It's a very, very different game tonight against the Penguins. They are a very high event team, especially defensively. They give up a lot. So I think you can live and tip your cap to the Canucks with the result last night, right? Where it's like, hey, you're shorthanded. You did what you had to do to get a win. You certainly don't want the process to look similar tonight against a really bad Penguins team, right? You need to see them be able to generate more, be able to do more with the puck, spend more time in the offensive zone, and hopefully they do have enough energy left in the tank to take advantage of a very slow Pittsburgh Penguins team.
Yeah, and that's the key here. Like, do the Canucks have the speed required to skate the Penguins off the sheet? Mm. On the second leg of a back-to-back following a night in which, you know, it's hard to defend all night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's exhausting, right, to spend all game without the puck. It's exhausting to spend all game with the puck, too, but it's especially tough if you're blocking 20-plus shots as a group, right, and chasing play around and stopping and starting all night to remain in structure. That's pretty tough. And yet, you know, we look at the schedule and we think the Penguins should be an easy game, right? You look at November, just generally, right? The Canucks had got the Sharks, the Ducks, right? They got the Flames, an Islanders team that I don't think a lot of people have as much respect for as I do. Mm-hmm. Right? The Blackhawks, a Predators team that has been among the worst in the league all season. A reeling Senators team that maybe looked a little bit tougher at the start of the month than they certainly did by the time the Canucks faced them. This Bruins team that can't score a goal to save their lives, loves to shoot the puck directly into a goaltender's pads. The Penguins, and then the Sabres on Friday, and then the Red Wings.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, the Sabres close out the month, and then the Red Wings. This team flagged a little bit. Their form flagged pretty significantly, actually, in the middle part of the month of November. You know, the JT Miller of it all sort of added a layer of seeming dysfunction onto sort of the month. But, I mean, you could easily, the next two, you'll come out of this month with 10 wins.
Yeah. Well, and already we talk about the road trip.
No, they have nine. They have eight.
Yeah, they have seven.
Seven.
Right now.
Okay.
So they can finish
the next
with nine
two,
wins.
Yeah. Very conceivable. You still finish having had a strong month.
Even looking just at this road trip, all of a sudden you win that game last night, right? If you win tonight, you've got 6 points already on the road trip. And how many people would have said, hey, you come home on this six game road trip with 6 points? That's a success considering the circumstances, right? So they have a chance against, again, a reeling Pittsburgh team to not only kind of check a box on this road trip, but position themselves to do a lot more than that if they can get a couple more results in the final three games. So, you know, it's the kind of thing that you look at the vibes even on the bench, right, with Petey and Sherwood kind of celebrating and gassing DeBrusk up at the end of the game. If you can get another result here, all of a sudden you've taken a moment that could look really bad.
That was really quite sweet.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was great. And like we talked about it after the Ottawa game. I bet the vibes in the locker room were off the charts after that Ottawa game, right? And now you go in and, hey, it wasn't pretty, but everyone blocked shots. Everyone worked hard. The guy returning to play his former team scores the goal. You get a win there. That gives you a little mojo back. And again, you have a chance now to turn a road trip that looked like a dangerous situation, a precarious situation, into something that actually helps you build momentum, helps you kind of get your swagger back into the locker room. We'll take a break here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. If you have thoughts, Canucks related, cartwheel related, or otherwise, you can send them in. Jason Bukla from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650, that's the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send your texts in right now. Now joining us from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he is our pal Jason Bukla. Jason, what's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? I'm just en route to the Oshawa for game two of the CHL, U.S. National
Yep.
Development Program stuff here. So, as I'm sure you can appreciate, battling through Toronto traffic like the Utah Hockey Club is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, right at rush hour at 4 o'clock. So, best of luck with that, Books. We appreciate you making time for us. You were at game one last night of the series between the two teams. What were your big takeaways? Who impressed you in the CHL's pretty comfortable victory last night?
Yeah, this CHL group is pretty special. They're going to be really a group of names to keep an eye on for world junior prowess here in the next couple of years. But a couple of guys really stood out on the CHL side. The big goaltender from Prince George. I know it was a 6-1 game, but Joshua Ravensbergen, you know, he's a southpaw, big guy, big in the net, good feet. He really attacks the top of his crease to front the shooter, which obviously makes him even bigger. You know, takes up a lot of the cage. Anyways, CHL came out hitting and pushing the pace, but Team USA did have a few chances, a few great A's in the first period, and he gave CHL a chance to get their legs under them, and then they took right off in the second period. But he was really impressive for me, and one of my favorite guys is right out in your backyard out there, boys. The Braden Coots kid who plays for Seattle,
mm-hmm.
He's a throwback. He's like a Brendan Gallagher at the best stage of Gallagher's entrance into the NHL, I would say. You know, when he was healthy and younger, Gallagher, how he was that
mm-hmm.
kind of rat, but would score and whatever. So I'm really impressed with him. But there's going to be some momentum at the top of this draft class. I got a sneaky suspicion that this isn't going to be a straight line. And as a matter of fact, there'll be a new number one on my list come next week when I drop it at sportsnet.ca. I've done enough scouting here and seen enough volume of games to rejig my list, and I'm looking forward to it.
Can you give us a spoiler? Who's rising at the top of the 2025 class here?
Don't be shocked, boys, if you see Matthew Schaefer from the Erie Otters right in the mix for number one overall. His last 10-game segment, he started the year with mononucleosis. He missed a bunch of time. He's only played 14 games. He was Team Canada's captain at the Hlinka Gretzky in the summertime. This kid, there's a really awesome story about this kid. It's not awesome. It's actually tragic. But where it's really good is just his perseverance and his character. So last year, he lost his mom to cancer, which is obviously horrific. And then a short time after that, he's really close with his land parents. He lost his landlady, like his billet mom as well, both in the same year.
Oh,
so this kid's already gone through some tragedy off the ice that's unspeakable. And for any young person, it would just, you know, for me personally, I think back to myself at that age, that would have derailed me for sure. Like, I don't know how emotionally I could have handled that. What he's done is he's just taken his entire structure, if you will, to another level. The mindset, the athleticism, the sport has gone to another level. I don't know if it's his escape mechanism or what, but he's already had the worst day, fellas, and the best days are still on the horizon. He is outstanding. Like I'm talking like Duncan Keith, Drew Doughty, Scott Niedermeyer type of combination on the back end. This kid is super elite, and he's going to be number one on my list next week. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He just is. He's fantastic.
James Hoggins was the guy we were talking about a couple of years out as the sort of consensus one. How's he tracked over the course of this season at BC?
Yeah, at BC. Fine. Yeah, no problems. He's doing fine. Only got a couple of goals. He's only got one goal, actually,
yep.
Versus college talent. His other one came against the U.S. National Team Development Program in that exhibition series that they play. But he's been fine. He hasn't done anything wrong. It's just that he's just, for me, he's just not in that same category as Schaefer right now. Could it change by the end of the year? Absolutely, it could change. But for the guys at the top of this draft class, the Misas of the world, the Porter Martones of the world, and then obviously Higgins, out of that mix of four names, including Schaefer, the other three guys, for me right now, have just trended more aggressively in an upward trajectory. And now, to be fair, Higgins is very young at the college level, just like Celebrini was last year. And it's a heavy lift because you know how that is. Guys are playing against older guys, and it's not easy. And he's playing top-line minutes at BC. He's doing everything he can. It's just he's going to be a hell of a player, too. It is just what it is right now.
You brought up Celebrini, and I want to have the discussion that seems to be sweeping the hockey world, and in my opinion, a little bit erroneously. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, and then maybe we can debate it a bit. What do you make of the "is Celebrini better than Bedard" talk that seems to be sweeping the nation as a result of everyone finally catching up to what a freak Celebrini actually is?
Possible. I'm not gonna deny that it's possible. But the one thing is, I feel like we're piling on Bedard right now.
Yes,
the sophomore slump and different things. Let's not forget what this kid was all about 2 years ago in Halifax, coming out of the World Juniors. Let's not forget how he carried most of the mail last year in Chicago. And I'm here to tell you that the Chicago Blackhawks got a lot of moving parts behind closed doors. It's that dressing room. And, just the infrastructure. There's a lot going on in Chicago. And let's not discount the fact when you're 18, 19 years old and there's noise in the room or there's noise around your group, that's not an easy lift. But I will say this, Celebrini is a more complete player in terms of being able to he tracks differently. You guys, I'm sure, have seen it. His speed game for 200 feet, his tenacity on the interior, he's different. He's programmed differently than Bedard. He doesn't have the he's not going to rip a puck in tight like Bedard, but he's not going to have to because, he's so tenacious and he's got great finish. He goes about his business differently. They're different, and I can see the discussion, but how lucky is the game to have that discussion?
Yes.
I think these kids are both superstars on the horizon. So let's not knock the snot out of one of them, comparing him to the other. This is a good news story on both accounts.
I like it, except that. So I as you know, Books, I've been holding a lot of Celebrini stock for an awfully long time, right? And
you have. Yeah.
I'm 0% surprised that he is, this wild like Jack Hughes / Taves / Pettersson as a shooter type hybrid. He has ceiling outcomes, I think, very much in his range of outcomes that are extraordinary. But also, I think people are really underrating just how non-functional that Chicago situation is at the moment, and more non-functional, frankly, than what they're dealing with in San Jose, where I got to give Mike Greer and company credit, like, they've kind of nailed the have just enough NHL talent on every pair and every line so that they can be that fun young team, as opposed to the dreck that, Anaheim and Chicago are serving up at the moment. So it's a slow burn. It's a slow burn on Bedard. But if you were to ask me which guy is more likely to be a 140-point guy in the next year and a half, I'm still taking Bedard, and I'm taking him with a lot of confidence. Like, I think we're overreacting significantly if we're docking Bedard at this point. And by the way, that 140, that I'm not just saying like as like a loose upside case. Like, I think Bedard's going to be one of the best hockey playing humans on the planet in a way that I think Celebrini is going to be like one of the best players in the league. And for me, that's the difference. Like, that's a difference between, you know, at the moment anyway, like a Pedersen tier guy and a McDavid tier guy.
Mm.
You know, but Bedard's one of the few guys, I think, who has a shot to be one of the best hockey playing humans on the planet.
I totally agree with that. Celebrini is going to be appreciated in different categories of the game, and it's going to look different on paper, and the results may look. The one thing that I would present to you guys right now is that, so San Jose is not a great team, but they're working to be the best version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And when I watch the San Jose Sharks play, they're enthusiastic. We can see it. They're having fun. They apparently must be having fun going to the rink. And behind the bench with Worsowski, you've got a younger guy who's, you know, an ex-college guy, younger guy. I think he's dialed in. Where Chicago and Anaheim have gone that old school kind of route, and the communication is different. It's different. And I'm not an insider, but I can tell you with a great deal of confidence, with the amount of work I do in the game still, that the room isn't 100% happy in Anaheim or Chicago. And it's like anybody, human nature is this, guys. I can't be the best version of myself if I'm not excited to come on and talk to you guys today. Like, I'm always excited to talk to you guys on Wednesday. I look forward to this, you know. I know our listeners are like, geez, you know, we could care less. But between the three of us, I love this, and, you know. And of course with Lena. But my point is this, that, you know, I think we can sit out and pull the best version of ourselves out of each other because we enjoy each other's company. In Anaheim and Chicago, there's so much going on behind the scenes, trust me when I tell you that it's difficult to be the best version of yourself. So it's good news in San Jose that they look like they're having fun, and you know, their enthusiasm could be infectious, which will bring sooner results in a positive direction, and hopefully not next year a sophomore slump the way that Bedard's going through a little bit right now for Celebrini.
Great stuff, Books. Yeah, I think you're bang on about just the situation. Oh yeah, of course. Are you kidding us? Yeah, fantastic having you on every Wednesday. I do want to talk a little Canucks prospects here as well, Books. And one guy that's, you know, former 7th round pick, Kirill Kudryavtsev, making his pro transition now, playing in Abbotsford, and the point production is there from a defenseman who's as young as he is, right, stepping into the AHL for the first time. And you know, with that kind of draft pedigree, right, 7th round, I think it's always kind of difficult to judge, okay, how legit is this guy as a prospect? What does his future look like? But he seems to be trending in the right direction. What do you make of his start to his pro career with the Abbotsford Canucks?
I agree with that assessment. I think that, you know, when I look at the Canucks, though, ahead of him, it's going to be interesting. So asset management is what's going to come down to here. I don't want to bore you, but it's going to come down to that. So as he's hit and he's producing and he's playing to his identity, the question I would have is, where does that fit in on the big roster going forward? And I'm not so sure that his style of play and his body type and all the rest of it, the way that he plays the game, I don't know where that fits necessarily. Like, if you look at the way the big team's assembled right now, you know, is he going to be a 5 or a 6 and play the way that he plays? He needs more, right? He's a volume guy. He's going to need the puck. He's going to need to make plays. So the great news is that from an asset management perspective, keep going, kid, because you're going to find a job in the league, and this is good for Vancouver. It's good for him. It's good for Abbotsford. It's good for everybody. And anytime you hit on a late-round guy, we all know how great that feels. And it becomes asset management. I don't fall too in love with these kids in the American League or college or junior. That's not my job. My job's to draft them. Somebody else develops them. But at the same time, I've got my fingers crossed that they develop, that they either land on my team or we move them out, because come trade deadline and everything else, those little extras that you can add in a piece, those are very important.
Books, Sawyer Mineau gathering some buzz to potentially be on Team Canada. Now, he's been dealing with an upper body injury for the last couple weeks. Looks like he may return this weekend or shortly thereafter. So is approaching his return. Now, it's a guy who's played pretty well on a massively overmatched Seattle Thunderbirds team. When you're evaluating the progress of a player in that sort of grim circumstance at the CHL, like, if he gets a chance to play on a winning team, either at the U-20s or because he's dealt to XYZ contender ahead of the WHL playoffs, both of which I, at this point, sort of expect, you know, not with confidence, but with some level of anticipation.
No, you can be confident in that. He's going to be moved, and he's definitely going to be moved if he goes to World Junior Camp and makes the club. He's going to be one of those deals in the drawer kids.
I think so, too. So what do you sort of take from how he's able to scale up in a winning environment, given how impressive he's been the last 18 months in a losing one?
So, very interesting. So, going back to the Coots kid, we had Sammy and I sat down with a bunch of the kids this week, and we were talking to him about, you know, Seattle. And the Mertic kid, who's a big rig defenseman from Czechia, he's coming over to Seattle this week. Big right shot guy. He's going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. And so he brought up Mineo himself, Sawyer. And the one thing that he mentioned right out of the box was that, that he felt the same about the injury. By the way, I can give you that just out of the kid's mouth. He says, yeah, it sounds like he's about a week or 10 days away. But, you know, that being that, whatever that is. And but his leadership amongst the group in the room, so you know that they're up against in Seattle, but the leadership of Sawyer individually, he says, wow, like, what a great leader. We follow this guy. He's, you know, showing us how to prepare properly, et cetera, et cetera. But everybody in the room is prepared for him to leave and get traded to a contending team. And that's good news. Good for Sawyer because, I mean, he's in the Team Canada discussion. Honestly, I didn't see that happening even a year ago. That's great. So he's bought into the player development model with the Vancouver Canucks. He's carried it over into junior. But high leverage is what I look for in my developing prospects. And if he can get into more high leverage situations in the second half of the year, top three, top pairing guy on a contending outfit. That matters a lot, guys. The more high leverage games you can get before you turn pro, the better.
How do you like his chances to be a part of Team Canada at the World Juniors?
I think he's in the mix. I think that there's going to be some real wild card type decisions being made with this roster, to be frank. Like, I even think the Schaefer kid is going to be in the mix. I don't even know if he's going to get an invite, but I'm watching, you know, and I'm thinking, like, I'm thinking to myself, how can you not get an invite? Dave Cameron was at the game last night, Team Canada's coach, and I'm sure he'll be here tonight as well. But yeah, I think so. Why not? And listen, you got to compete for a job at that training camp. It's on home soil. Dave Cameron's not going to be looking for anybody. He's not going to give out anything for free coming out of that training camp. Your reputation is going to mean a big fat zero when you walk in the door for Team Canada. It's going to be how you project and how you play when you arrive. And Mineo, if he's healthy, he's going to have a chance.
I'm curious to get the Volander take with the World Juniors in mind, right? It's American Thanksgiving. We're approaching the holiday season is what I was trying to say. The holiday season. So we're going to start to hear Christmas music. And, you know, like any other red-blooded Canadian my age, when I hear Christmas music, I also think World Juniors. What do you expect from Volander in terms of a role on Team Sweden? Just given what Axel Sandin Palicka is doing over in the SHL, I mean, he's probably not going to be top pair guy, right? He's probably not playing power play one the way he would in a normal situation, right? Like, his draft class just happens to have a more offensively calibrated guy who shoots the same handedness that he does, right? So what does sort of a second year glow up at the U-20s look like for Volander in your view?
I'm not so sure that they don't play each other together. Like, Sandin Palicka can play his offside and open up. You know, when you open up when you're a right shot, that's a good thing. I think back to 2 years ago when Volander really came on the scene at the Four Nations in Plymouth, actually it was. And he really did get more than secondary power play, and his role was elevated. Then his entire draft stock took off after that. I'm expecting heavy minutes. And the one thing that always puzzles me, though, this is my problem with the World Juniors when it comes to the European teams. They're not programmed like we are in Canada or the U.S. team is. They seem to, some guys play too much. I'm trying to be kind here. Like, they seem to level out their playing field minute-wise more than we do in North America. So I'm curious to see. But he's going to get all the top six matchups defensively. I would not be the least bit shocked to see him opening up on his strong side on the power play and switching somebody else like a Sandin Pavelka on the weak side. Hmm. I think he's going to play a lot. North of 20 minutes a night, he's going to be a big part of that team.
Hey, Books, one more CHL question for you here. I saw today that the Memorial Cup coming back out to BC in 2026. It'll be the Kelowna Rockets hosting it. And, I mean, first of all, great news for junior hockey fans here in British Columbia. But also, this was an interesting one, right? Because I know Medicine Hat was one of the teams in the running. And, of course, 2026, that's going to be Gavin McKenna's draft year, you know, kind of the next super prospect in the CHL coming up. And I think there was some speculation that maybe they would award it to Medicine Hat as a kind of a lure to keep Gavin McKenna in the CHL. Now, all of a sudden, the NCAA might be a possibility for him. I mean, it's just, to me, it's just another example of this new kind of uncertain era we're in. But what was your reaction? What are your thoughts on Memorial Cup 2026 coming to Kelowna?
I'm about to say something that's going to be very unpopular for people in BC, and it's not personal because I love going to games at Kelowna. I love the city of Kelowna, the whole nine yards. To me, this felt like an opportunity for the CHL to showcase two things. A, Medicine Hat used to play in the old barn downtown behind the YMCA. They got the new arena there. It's been a slow burn to build the organization back up. Willie Desjardins did a hell of a job there. I feel like this was a situation where that community deserved it and deserved to have it, not only because of the team, but because of the noise that is south of the border. I'm fearful that this might open up a can of worms and there's going to be a lot of people preying on Gavin McKenna to take himself to the border now, more so than before. And I guess that's just the world we live in now. But that's my take. Listen, I love the Memorial Cup. I love all the cities it goes to. But here, I feel like we might have cut our nose off despite our face just because I feel like it was a nice opportunity for the community that is Medicine Hat and the high-end talent. Like, what happens if Aguila makes Utah before then? Like, there's a lot of things going through my mind. And I know it's fresh right now, so... But I know it's not a popular response for people listening, but I just felt like this was an opportunity to go down that road.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's been the conversation around it, right? I think a lot of people thought it was going to be Medicine Hat for those reasons. And as you said, you know, it's nothing against Kelowna, but it's a fascinating decision that they had to make. And we'll see how it ultimately plays out for the CHL and Gavin McKenna. Books, great stuff, man. We always look forward to chatting with you as well. Thanks for doing this.
Awesome, boys. Enjoy the night, and we'll talk to you soon.
We will. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. And it's such a fascinating situation, right? Like, because I have no problem with the new rules allowing players to go from the CHL to the NCAA.
It's good for players.
It's player empowerment. That's fine, right? There's no reason they should be barred from doing it.
And if you get in a proper NIL system, because right now it's difficult for Canadian citizens to actually profit off NIL, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, how do you actually use NIL in NCAA given the relatively low profile that college hockey has in the States from like an advertiser perspective, right? It's like you almost have to be like an American citizen who gets drafted by a Canadian team. And then maybe there's some regional, like,
it's just
complicated.
If you were like a Minnesota kid who went to the University of Minnesota or something and were a high profile, like I could see that.
We're not talking Bryce Underwood being recruited by Dave Portnoy and you know, paid $12 million to change from LSU to Michigan, right? Like the world that we're living in football for college sports or even basketball. I mean, these guys are pros now, like flat out, like Caleb Williams has been earning millions of dollars since he was a sophomore. We're not there yet in Div 1 hockey. And, but, you know, as that becomes worked out more robust, healthier, and applies a little more fairly to Canadian players, you know, this is just opportunity for young hockey players to get an education, get a scholarship, you know, play
better competition.
And not have that thing that often happens. Like kids have been at the age of 15, like facing difficult decisions where it's like, do I even want to make my CHL debut given that it would violate my amateur, you know, status from the perspective of playing Div 1 hockey? Well, now Div 1 hockey is not really amateur, so Thank goodness.
And the facilities, all of those things, right? But also from a CHL perspective, and I'm not placing any blame on the player if he makes the decision.
No.
What a blow it would be to lose a prospect like Gavin McKenna. Oh. Like, that is just a... Man, like, imagine if Connor McDavid had left the CHL, or Connor Bedard, right, after a couple of years before their draft year. That is a really, really tough place to be in for the league. I have no idea how it's going to play out. As I said, it's uncharted territory very much for everyone, but it's just fascinating.
You got to figure out the model, though, right? Yeah. Like, if this is going to stress out the model, and the model is going to have to change.
It's going to adjust in some way.
And, you know, I mean, there have been a ton of issues with how these players are compensated, right? A ton of issues across the board. In the CHL, this sort of like fake amateur status that players like, it's not as if the hypocrisy of the American system has been better up in Canada.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So they'll have to figure out a way to evolve or die.
I'm tempted to see if we can get Dom to fade it down and then fade it up a third time, but I'll take the hint. I'll take the second hint, all right? And we'll go to break. We'll do the whiteboard next. Final segment of Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650.